Legend has it the first coffee addicts were goats. A shepherd saw his flock indulging in what looked like berries, and afterwards they were so energetic and lively, as though the berries had given them superpowers. Those berries were coffee beans, or so the story goes. Regardless, humanity has been obsessed with coffee across time and space. And these days, who doesn't have a favorite coffee house? The delicate balance of atmosphere, decor, coffee, and regulars makes any given cafe a place to go for some, and a place to avoid for others. I'm Gina Kaufman. We're going to enjoy a little coffee talk with our food critics here on Central Standard, right after this news. Stay with us. On your way to work in the morning, you're feeling sleepy, so you stop by a coffee shop and order a latte. Then you hang out at the counter for a little while some clinging and clanging happens, steam rumbles, and then poof, a few minutes later, your drink materializes. What happens during those minutes? What's all that clinging and clanging about? Meg Dahl at Broadway Cafe tells us what's going on.
Usually it's filled with pitcher, up to about the dimple. Pull this up and steam milk at the same time. So I'm going to pour the latte. I'm going to keep swirling the milk. You're going to have to swirl a couple times, maybe as you pour. Now I'm finished up.
I'm Gina Kaufman, and hearing those sounds made me crave an espresso drink, even though I already had one this morning to fend off that very problem. Today on Central Standard, we're talking about coffee and the places where people sit around drinking it. Coffee shops, coffee houses, cafes, whatever you like to call them. If you've found a new hangout or can't stop singing the praises of an old standby, we'll want to hear about it when our food critics join us later in the hour. For now, we've got Pete Licata in the studio. He won the World Barista Championship of 2013, and he lives here in Kansas City. Hi, Pete.
Hi, Gina. How are you?
Good. So I saw some affirmative nodding as that process was being described and as you were hearing the sounds that characterize it.
Yeah. It's a kind of thinking about what I was hearing, visualizing it a little bit, you know, thinking about things that are good, things that might be bad, you know, but it's pretty accurate.
Can you tell from the sound of milk steaming, for example, whether it's being steamed properly?
Yes.
How can you tell?
The easiest way, I should say, to determine that is if it's really loud, if it sounds like it's kind of screaming at you, then it's probably not being steamed properly. Usually when it's done right, it's really kind of quiet and soft. You hear this kind of like hissing sound very briefly, but then it just kind of gets muffled and just becomes really quiet.
I've heard that there's like a sweet spot if you tilt things just properly.
Depending on the espresso machine, the way that it works, everything is a little bit different. Or the steam pitcher that you're using, there can be a sweet spot. And some of it's just, you know, really boils down to the technique and the skill of the barista who's making that coffee or making that milk.
So let's break down that process we heard on our sneak peek behind the counter at Broadway Cafe. Let's break it down a little bit more for our listeners. First of all, what's the difference between espresso and regular coffee for the uninitiated?
The primary difference is just the way that it's brewed. Regular coffee is essentially water is poured over coffee grinds and it drips through. Espresso is actually a machine that forces the water through the coffee grinds and creates a really dense, condensed, heavy, thick beverage.
Espresso you have to drink right away. Why is that?
It's considered to be fresh and it's volatile. So there's the crema, which is all these tiny little bubbles that are the oils and solids of the coffee that contain gases that are inside of that coffee that's been extracted and kind of forced into it through that extraction method of espresso. And they break down really quickly. So it's considered proper, you know, and you might lose some flavor or aromas, especially if you let it sit.
Most coffee shop customers do have a sense of when they're drinking, say, a latte or cappuccino, they might have their own preference for how they like their milk. But create their own terminology to describe it. How would you describe the difference between milk that's been sort of haphazardly steamed and milk that's been steamed to ultimate perfection?
Well, we'll start with the milk that's been steamed to ultimate perfection. Generally speaking, when it's done really well, there's a lot of bubbles in there, but they call them microbubbles because they're so small you don't even realize that they're bubbles. When you swirl it around in the pitcher, it actually looks kind of like you've got this really thick, wet, white, like primer paint in the steaming pitcher that you've got. So it's really thick and shiny and smooth. Poorly steamed and textured milk is actually kind of refer to it more like shower foam or soap foam, you know, where it's these big bubbles and it's kind of dry and there's a lot of air in there.
And you can see them popping.
Yeah, you can see them popping. You can see them kind of sitting there. And really, the reason we consider good, well-steamed milk versus poorly steamed milk is because when it's poorly steamed like that, you just taste the air. And you don't really taste this flavor of sweet milk and the sugars being kind of, you know, developed into almost like a caramelization in there that's not really, not truly caramelization, but just makes it sweeter.
For cappuccino drinkers where the steamed milk is supposed to be really extra light and not so milky, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to describe that. But for them, I've heard cappuccino lovers who will say that they want their steamed milk to be very dry. Uh-huh. How does that fit into what you're talking about?
Well, generally the term dry means that there's more foam. So you can still do it properly and have that micro foam that's really, really small bubbles, and it creates this really dense, thick foam. But once again, it's all air that's building up that volume. So what it boils down to is in the actual drink, you don't have as much liquid milk going into the drink itself.
This is making me so thirsty. In Italy, which is, I think, the home of espresso drinks, being mm-hmm. a barista is considered a highly skilled professional trade. What is the training like in Kansas City cafes? Is it approaching what they do in Italy, or do we still have a long way to go?
Well, I would say that, you know, being a barista in the United States and even most of the rest of the world has departed in a very different way from Italy. The methodology is very much down to the company that's training. There are some training schools around the country as well. But, you know, we've really focused a lot more on the details of the extraction, trying to kind of line up scientific numbers of, you know,
we're type A about it
a little bit. Yeah. You know, more extraction yields and things like this. And really trying to create more of a perfected, balanced shot of espresso and things like that. In Italy, you know, they still use a lot of kind of darker roasted blends with the Robusta coffee, which can actually taste pretty good. I was over there in June, you know, and there is some good stuff over there, but it's very different from what we do over here. So like I say, it really boils down to the company and the protocols that they've put in place to train their staff.
What makes a good barista in your estimation?
I really think that a good barista is somebody who doesn't necessarily know it all, but a good barista is somebody who has the attention to the details to then learn and, you know, improve themselves. And I think that's really important because, you know, what we're trying to do is we're trying to make something as perfectly as we possibly can, but we're also trying to make it approachable and serve it to a lot of customers. And so you need to be able to pay attention and say, oops, you know what, I think I did something differently and, you know, maybe you taste the coffee or get
maybe
some
feedback. Maybe I shouldn't serve this to you.
Right. You know, say like, something's different about this. I shouldn't serve that, or I should make sure that it's good before I serve it. And that, of course, doesn't mean tasting it, but, you know, doing all the quality checks that you can.
How did you get into coffee?
I was going to college, actually, and I was studying Japanese at junior college, Johnson County Community College, and I needed a job. A friend of mine was managing the cafe across the street, which was a PT's coffee location at the time. And she'd actually worked for me. I'd been her boss before. And she said, hey, you know, you need a job. Why don't you come be a barista? And I was just like, oh, man, I don't know about that. You know, But I was in the cafe every day anyway. I was sitting there doing homework. I was like, yeah, I like this place. You know, it's kind of fun. So I took a job. And, you know, ultimately, it's like as soon as I started working, the customers coming in, the workflow, the environment, the music playing, it was a lot of fun. I just really enjoyed that interaction with people. And, of course, that kind of intense learning and teaching that they were focusing on training people.
So you're technically the best in the world now, which is such a weird thing for anyone to be at anything on some level.
Yeah.
Thinking back to those early days when you were a college kid taking a job to make some money,
mm-hmm.
Was there an early lesson that you learned, like something you were really bad at to start out and had to figure out and get better at?
There were a lot of things I was really bad at. And of course, hindsight now, looking at different aspects, different things that I thought I was really good at. I would say that, you know, one thing that's really become a part of who I am now and what I do is tasting the coffee. And I would always see these and descriptions of like, oh, there's hints of cherries and, you know, blueberries and, you know, walnuts and all these different things in there.
I tasted a hint of sawdust.
Right. And what I was really bad at was being able to taste and identify things. I hadn't really developed my palate in that way. And coffee is one of those things where you just have to taste a lot of it to be able to kind of get into the nuances of it, I think, like a lot of things. And I honestly was sitting there just like, I don't know how to describe this, and I can't do it. I'm terrible at it. And that was something that really took a lot of time, took a lot of effort to just think about identifying flavors, things like that, which ultimately correlates to the food and beverage industry in general.
If you were to guess at what set you apart from your competition on the international barista stage, mm-hmm. what do you think it would be? I mean, I know that's not a comfortable thing to say about yourself, but I think it might help us understand these intangible things that make a great barista and a great cup of coffee.
Well, you know, I talk about myself all the time, so it's okay. No.
Glad you're comfortable with it.
No, I would say there's a lot of things that added up to it, but this wasn't my first time to the world stage. I was living in Hawaii. I got in second place in 2011 in the world. But I think ultimately in 2013 was a combination of a lot of things, one of them being kind of the attitude that I was approaching the competition from, which was, you know, the representation of other people. As a barista, I become a representative. There's a farmer who worked really hard on this coffee. They did all kinds of farming practices and trying to do everything as well as they could in order to make it great. And as a barista, I need to be able to represent that, know everything about it, and be able to make it to its fullest potential. And the same story with a roaster who then roasted that coffee. So I had that. I had a lot of experience with barista competitions. I'd done it that was my 7th year competing, I believe. So I had a lot of technical skills and understanding of how things worked and how to do things as well as I could for that specific purpose. And, you know, just ultimately I had a unique story that was, you know, and once again, talking about yourself, you know, a little bit more humble of, you know, saying like, it's not all about me, actually. It's about a lot of people inside of this coffee industry.
I love that idea. It's almost like you're the last leg of a relay race
yeah.
or something.
Right.
But thinking about coffee more broadly, I'm hearing some of the newer coffee places in town described as third wave coffee shops, mm-hmm. which kind of, I have to admit, kind of cracks me up a little bit, like third wave feminism or something.
Right.
What is third wave coffee?
Well, third wave coffee is a term actually we've been using since I was starting in coffee. And it really kind of is starting to be defined as the current coffee movement. So if you look at first wave and second wave, you know, you've got old school like Folgers, you've got things.
So that's wave one.
Right. Technically, a lot of people will say that Starbucks is kind of like a wave two. There's kind of blurry lines in there in different places, but, you know, this is when coffee started to become a specialty. It started to become a little bit more focused and things like that. Now, third wave is where people are really starting to try to take things back to the farmers. They're trying to be connected vertically from the beginning to the end of the you know, coffee's story, essentially, and really trying to, you know, develop an entire product that, that they not just have control over, but are able to kind of make sustainable, you know, and make it really affect people's lives all the way across, around the world.
So full-on coffee geekdom.
Full-on coffee geekdom is a good way to say it.
We're also seeing more in-house roasting operations. What would you say is behind that trend, and what is the difference between coffee that's been roasted on the premises or nearby and coffee that's been roasted somewhere else?
Well, there's not really one rule you can use on that, because sometimes there's amazing coffee, sometimes there's not so amazing coffee out there. But it is definitely a trend that's growing, and I've seen this in different countries and different cities as well, really catching on here in Kansas City now. And, you know, what you have is you've got a different philosophy. Usually the people who are roasting in-house are looking at doing a smaller operation. They're not going to roast as much coffee. They're going to roast what they need, and maybe they'll do some small wholesale or, you know, things like that. If they open more cafes, they'll keep roasting for that purpose. But they're not trying to, you know, do a massive production line type of roasting. You know, your people who are just a roaster, you know, wholesaler, or people who maybe they have cafes, but they have a separate roasting entity, you know, they're usually looking at bringing in more coffee. They're becoming successful because they're selling more bags of coffee. They might be selling it to grocery stores. They might be selling it to offices, different places like that. So it's a little bit of a different focus.
As you travel the world, do you see trends that have yet to make their way here, coffee trends?
A little bit, yeah. One of those is the Australian coffee house. Me and my friends talk about it quite a bit, actually. And so, especially in Melbourne, Australia, we go down there. I've been down there a couple times now. And the cafes are really focused. I mean, everybody there wants coffee, and they want really good coffee. You know, if you're out there making bad coffee or serving bad food, you're probably not going to stay in business too long. But the thing that I see is the combination. So places that aren't just serving coffee, they're serving coffee and food, and they're doing both incredibly well.
So the food isn't an afterthought or accompaniment.
Right. It's a true part of that business plan. But like every cafe in Melbourne has great food and great coffee, or in my opinion. And obviously some are better than others. But, you know, I think that there's also, you know, the added value type of place where, you know, you have different things that you can get. So in the morning you might get coffee. In the evening, you might get alcohol. And we've seen that in Kansas City here pretty recently. The Almaeus just opened up down in Crossroads, and they're doing that type of operation, and it's nice. But I've seen that in other places, and that's even in an old kind of Italian-style barista with bar, you know, cafe or whatnot. Is they've got coffee, and then they've got wine, alcohol later on when you don't necessarily want coffee.
So do you think there's anything unique about Kansas City's coffee culture today in 2014?
I do think that there is, and it's something that's a little less tangible. And I would say that it really the Kansas City coffee community is much more kind of tied together. There's a lot more of the real community aspect. There's a lot of people who are willing to help each other. Not quite as many secrets or rivalries, if you will. There still are here and there, but it's not, you know, not quite as much pronounced, you know. And, you know, they've really come together and helped each other out and really tried to build a solid community together.
Pete Licata, world champion barista, manager of quality assurance at Parisi Artisan Coffee, thank you for stopping by.
Thank you.
Central Standard's going to take a short break. The food critics will be here in just a moment. What makes a great coffee shop? What do you look for? Join the conversation at 816-235-2888. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM KCUR, online at kcur.org, a service of UMKC.
You're listening to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and the food critics are now in session. Food critics, please introduce yourselves.
Charles Ferruzza with The Pitch and The Pitch's website, which is at pitch.com.
I'm Jenny Vergara, and I'm the contributing editor for Feast Magazine.
I'm Emily Ferris with Feed Me Creative, and I'm a cocktail columnist for MadeMan.com.
So as we heard from Pete Licata, even world champion baristas acknowledge that what makes a great coffee shop, more on that terminology in a second, is more than the coffee. There are a lot of intangibles that go into determining whether a place is a hit, developing a following, or not. So we'll be exploring the options in town during this hour, and we'd like to hear about your favorite places at 816-235-2888. That number again is 816-235-2888. So there has been some discussion amongst our critics behind the scenes about the terminology we use to describe these places, coffee shop versus coffee house in particular. Charles, what's your take on this?
Well, I just want to say that the term coffee house actually dates back to the 17th century. In London, there were coffee houses where people went for coffee and conversation. And as Emily pointed out earlier, they were kind of like saloons for coffee. Mostly men went there, and they had good coffee, and you'd sit around and talk about men things, I guess. and in my growing up process, a coffee shop was like a diner, a full-service restaurant, often in a hotel. Hotels had coffee shops then.
Interesting.
Well, the best coffee shop that I've ever been to in the history of Kansas City, in my history in Kansas City, was the old Alameda Plaza Hotel, which had the Pam Pam Room. That was a great, great coffee shop.
The Alameda Plaza, is that where the Fairmount is today?
The Intercontinental.
Oh, okay.
It's had many incarnations. and they don't really have – in fact, I'd love if a caller would call in. And you know, I don't know if hotels even have coffee shops anymore. But they were, you know, they were modestly priced restaurants that actually stayed open quite late. And you could get a good cup of coffee – not a great cup of coffee, but a good cup of coffee and – a hot meal. And that, to me, is the difference between a coffee shop and a coffee house, because I think coffee houses in Kansas City tend to have, you know, the same awful pastries and not a lot else. What do you think, fellow critics?
Well, I think there's just so much more of a focus on coffee and the quality of coffee and the method for roasting the coffee and brewing the coffee. And so I wouldn't necessarily go get coffee at a place that also did pancakes and waffles, because that's not going to be good. In my experience, from, you know, I was born in 1982, so it's kind of after the difference between a coffee house and a coffee shop. But I go to a place that has good coffee. So I guess that would be a coffee house.
Now, I'll tell you what I think is a classic coffee shop, although they wouldn't consider it a coffee shop probably, and they don't have great coffee, but they've got very, very good coffee, is Casconi's Diner in the City Market. And what they do have is those old silver tureens, those coffee tureens that have really good, really strong coffee. Maybe not, you know, glamorous coffee like Hot Lake Correct or a place like that, but good, strong coffee where you could also get pancakes.
Okay. But I am interested in the idea that there might be some generational differences, because when I hear the phrase coffee house, it's one that it's not that I don't hear it used at all, but it has this ring of, like, to me, this is purely subjective, but like beatniks or like 1970s beret wearing kind of behavior and a lot of smoke.
I'd love to find that coffee house. I would love to have find the smoky beatnik coffee house.
Along those same lines, I kind of think of it, there's this culture of coffee houses among the Christian community being an alternative to a bar. And so I kind of think of that as a place to go and drink things that aren't going to leave you as quite as intoxicated as a bar. So kind of that community around a coffee house.
Jenny, what's been your experience with these terms or your associations with them?
Yeah, you know, I kind of probably sit right in the middle between Charles and Emily in terms of, you know, kind of where I sit, but age-wise. So, you know, the terms really aren't familiar. I don't know that I would even use them in my day-to-day life. It is interesting, actually, to know the history of them, I think.
You wouldn't use either one?
No.
What would you say? You're going to a place where they serve coffee in sometimes paper cups with a little plastic lid. What is this place called?
I'm just going to get coffee.
You go to get coffee, and because coffee is so much more, there's so much more of a focus on that quality and the brewing and the roasting, we say, I don't know if you say, I'm going to Oddly Correct, mm-hmm. I'm going to Thalmayest, mm-hmm. I'm going to Bellinapoli. It's mm-hmm. not, I'm going to the coffee house, because there are so many great options in Kansas City now.
Well, let's hear what our listeners are recommending at 816-235-2888. We're going to turn to Dorothy in Overland Park. Hi, Dorothy.
Hi, how are you? Nice conversation this morning. I just want to recommend to everybody a shop here in Overland Park. It's called Revo Cup, R-E-V-O-C-U-P.
Revo Cup. Anyone here heard of it?
I have been once.
Where is it?
It's right off of I-35, correct?
It's between I-35 and College, yes.
Yes,
on Quivira.
Off Quivira. Mm-hmm. They actually have really good coffee. Yeah.
Yes, and the couple that own it, he roasts his own coffee, and it's not just one type of coffee. He has several different types. He roasts his own coffee, and they're Ethiopians, and they return a portion of their profits to Ethiopia to help out over there. And it's just delightful. You walk in, and everybody, you know, it's like walking into Cheers. People say, hi, Dorothy, how are you? And the coffee is delicious. They do not, I know he serves sandwiches, but Hop Tea and TG are the owners, and I have no idea what their last name is, but I would highly recommend it. The coffee is delicious. You can buy it by the pound. And again, he roasts it himself.
Thank you so much, Dorothy. And Emily, you've been there. Can you tell us a little bit about the atmosphere? All these places do have their kind of their own atmosphere, their own regulars.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what I would compare it to that people might know. It's kind of a darker than a – there are two kinds of coffee shops. There's like the bright coffee shop and then the darker kind of more
beatniky
atmosphere. But yeah, it's larger than a coffee shop in the city. And I was only there once for a quick meeting, but it was there was plenty of seating, which I think is really important in a coffee shop.
You know, I've actually been there once, and I thought the coffee was delicious. I thought the owner was charming, and I certainly love the fact that, you know, donations are made back to his charitable organization. But the place was kind of dirty. Like, I haven't been back, honestly, since I just felt like the tabletops were sticky, the floors were sticky. And, you know, if you want to hang out in a place and make it your third space, you want it to be clean.
Were you there on the weekend? There were probably children before you.
Yes. I was there on a Saturday.
Yeah. And that's an interesting thing, that part of the cachet of some of the, I'll put quotes around, the darker coffee shops can be like maybe a little less sterile of an environment than what people might be accustomed to elsewhere.
Part of that, too, is I think part of the charm of a coffee house or a coffee shop is that you kind of, you claim your space and you make it your home. So you eat a sticky bun and you spill your coffee and you spread your stuff out and you kind of...
Hopefully, though, you leave your shoes on. That's something yes. that I am seeing, and it's making me nuts.
I think that's probably illegal. The health department would
I think
shut
so
that
too.
Down.
Really? I don't think so. I mean,
shirt, no shoes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Thank you.
Well, before we return, we do have other callers, and I'm going to turn to them in a second, but we haven't gotten our critics' recommendations. I wonder if each of you could suggest a place that you think is worth going.
Well, I actually came in with a top five, but I will, as far as the whole coffee shop, the atmosphere, hanging out, there's a new one called Thalmayest on 18th Street, and there's so much space, and they roast their own beans, and I love the atmosphere. It was designed by Utilitarian Workshop. They designed Port Fonda. They use a lot of reclaimed materials, and it's very campy in there, and the coffee is really good, and they have they're not house-made. I believe they're made by Heirloom Baking Company, the Pop-Tarts.
But Pop-Tarts.
They're locally made version of Pop-Tarts, and they have a
frosted or unfrosted?
Frosted with sprinkles and a cheddar biscuit that rivals that of Red Lobster's.
We'll get back to your other four in a second. Jenny, if you're going to pick out one, what's it going to be?
Yeah, you know, for me, coffee does have to come with some good food, which is really what Emily pointed to in her suggestion. For me, it's Black Dog Coffee on 87th in Lenexa, because they have that terrific Ibis bread that they make those big, thick slices of toast with different butters and jams and cinnamon sugar on it. And their coffee is excellent. The staff is always so friendly. And they've repainted and reorganized and redone the inside since I first started going there. I used to live in Lenexa for years and years. And I love that place. I'm crazy about it.
All right. So that's Black Dog Coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And Charles, what about you?
I'm kind of a fan of, and this is, you know, a coffee house, because there is some food there, but nothing, you know, no pancakes. I like Crow's Coffee between Brookside Boulevard and Oak, I guess it would be.
That's pretty new.
Yeah, 51st. And Zach Moores owns it, and it's clean and appealing. And I've never seen anyone in there without shoes. But
I have.
Oh, sacre cool.
I have a picture of it on Instagram. I have proof.
Okay.
But what do you like about Crow's Coffee?
Well, the coffee is very, very good. And the people who work there are extremely nice, which isn't always the case in coffee houses. You know, you get these sullen people behind the counter and who think they're doing you a gigantic favor by pouring you a cup of coffee.
We must like the abuse, though, right? Or else there wouldn't be these lines.
Well, you know, that's an interesting proposition. I think maybe you're right.
I think we all want our baristas to like us. That's why we keep going back and put up with the abuse.
Well, hey, if you have an opinion on that, 816-235-2888. We've got Kevin and Miriam on the line with us. Hi, Kevin.
Hello. I just wanted to add that my definition of a coffee house, and you may have discussed this already, actually includes overstuffed chairs and a sofa and reading material and a place like that versus a diner that's more, like Charles said, where you can get pancakes and over easy eggs.
So you want to be someplace where you kind of feel like you're in a home and you have not just, we've mentioned food and drink and a cozy atmosphere, but maybe reading material or
taking your shoes off.
Kevin, are you a shoe taker offer?
I am.
You are?
In a coffee shop.
Yeah.
Whoa.
I guess if you're sitting in a comfortable chair, why not?
That's the problem.
Yeah, exactly.
Eliminate the couches and the chairs and you eliminate the Kevins.
But Jenny, this was your pet peeve. Do you have a professed shoe taker offer on the line? Do you have any questions for him?
No, I really don't. I don't understand why you think it's such a public space that you feel comfortable enough to take your shoes off. To me, that feels like kind of something you would do at home, maybe not necessarily in public. Would you go to your office and take your shoes off under your desk?
Oh, I do that.
I do that too. Yeah.
Really?
But I think that is the
public versus private, I think, is my issue with it.
But that's kind of where the coffee shop lives. The coffee shop really, or coffee house, really tries to live between feeling like your living room and being a food establishment. And I think that is why people feel so comfortable doing that. I hope that they're always wearing clean socks when they do. But it's
maybe
it's
thick clean socks.
Maybe bring some slippers. I really do think
I think maybe coffee houses, because this is where people, you know, feel like they're at home. I think they should supply slippers.
Huh. I really do think this is probably against health department code. So if anyone from the health department is listening, let us know if it is illegal to take off your shoes in a coffee shop.
But, you know, something I wanted to bring up with you guys is that coffee shops, I call them coffee shops. I'm sorry, Charles. They feel different now that smoking is illegal inside public food and drink establishments. And I wonder if some of the things people used to, some of the casual, like, this is my place type stuff that maybe people used to achieve when they'd get out their cigarettes. And
in the beatnik days.
I wonder, you know, maybe the best people can come up with now is taking off their shoes.
Yeah, as opposed to lighting up a Marlboro. Yeah.
But, you know, there's a new, I don't know, I doubt this had anything to do with cigarettes, but there's a new trend in coffee shops that are also bars. Mm-hmm. So coffee shops that serve booze now. And I know that Thou Mayest, which I mentioned earlier on 18th Street, has a bar. And they serve drinks. Bourgeois Pig.
Andre's. Coffee shop and wine bar has just opened.
Oh, yeah, they just started doing that. The Bourgeois Pig in Lawrence. They are a bar at night and a coffee shop in the morning. There are Parisi, the one in Park Place. Mm-hmm. Parisi Coffee also has.
And where is Park Place?
In
115th
Leawood.
And Row, more or less.
Yeah. It's a big shopping area. They also have alcoholic coffee beverages at the coffee bar.
They pick you up just to let you back down.
Exactly.
Let's talk to Mike in Kansas City. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how you doing?
Great. How are you?
Good. I heard you, or someone, I guess, say earlier that it wasn't all about the coffee when you're talking about the coffee house. But for me, it is all about the coffee. I'm crazy for an expertly pulled espresso shot. And that is the mark of a wonderful coffee shop or coffee house. When you go in and they pull the shot for you and put it in your hand and you can smell it and drink it right away.
So you drink fresh. Just a straight shot of espresso?
Absolutely.
What do you like about that experience?
Well, aside from the aroma, which is probably the biggest attraction, it's such a wonderful way to take coffee. Just the quick shot of espresso.
So, Mike, where do you get it?
Three sips.
Where do you get that shot?
I recommend City Market Coffee.
Okay.
And they have totally spoiled me. I can't go to a lot of the chain places. You can't get an espresso that's of reasonable quality there. You have to go somewhere where they put some TLC into it.
Okay. Thanks, Mike. Well, we'll hear your recommendations after this break. 816-235-2888 to join the conversation and make your recommendation. Welcome back. I'm Gina Kaufman. We're talking coffee this morning with the food critics on Central Standard. We're getting their recommendations and yours for great coffee haunts in town. Call 816-235-2888 to tweet us or to weigh in. Our handle is at KCURCST. And we do have someone on the line, and I want to get to her in a second. But Emily, you brought in 5 recommendations, and we've only talked about one. So do you want to take us through some of your other top 5?
My top 5, they're all very kind of Midtown, Kansas City centric, so I apologize. But Thou Mayest, which I talked about, I actually go to Bell and Appley almost every morning, 63rd and Brookside Boulevard. And that's, they don't really feel like a coffee shop. It's like an old Italian deli. They have great, great coffee. They have their own Broadway blend there. I love Hi Hat Coffee at 51st and State Line. It is the cutest coffee shop in all the land. It's tiny and adorable and wonderful.
It's very Keebler Elf-esque.
It is. And the baristas know everyone's name. And it's a great little coffee shop. Charles mentioned Crow's Coffee. Love Crow's. Full disclosure, I have done some work for Crow's Coffee, but I love the space. I love going there. I love the people. It's great. And then Oddly Correct at 39th and Main. They have amazing coffee. They are very particular about, they roast their own beans, and they're very particular about the way it's prepared, but it makes for an amazing cup of coffee.
Now, is it true, Emily, that you cannot get cream with your coffee at Oddly Correct? I mean, they're so rigid about things like that.
I have, Charles, we're going to take a trip there and find answers to these questions. I visited the other day with Gregory Colstow of Oddly Correct, located at the busy intersection of Westport and Main. They've got what they call a tasting room with a bare bones aesthetic. And Gregory very kindly brewed and poured 3 cups of coffee on my visit, walked me through each variety while explaining a little bit about Oddly Correct's uniquely purist philosophy.
We want to bat away any type of pretense that is already assumed about, you know, being a hipster coffee shop, so to speak. Whereas anybody now seeking sort of specification in industry is perceived as a certain way, which is fine. I'm willing to, that's life. We all do it to a degree. So we try to be really hospitable and kind, but part of our method here is we actually look at our shop as a tasting room for a coffee roaster instead of a coffee shop. So we only have coffee. We don't have tea. We don't have chai. And so if I didn't take a moment, even with our menus, they're on clipboards. So, and if I can tell this is your first time if you're here because you're looking for a menu or something, so you can be like, hey, first time, welcome, you know. And on our best days, we can talk through what we do and sort of frame it in the context of who we are as a company so that we don't say, no, we don't do this, no, we don't do that, no, we don't do that. And then you just are like, well, why am I here? Why? You know, so we're hoping to be able to set a stage and a context for experiencing coffee in a new way.
Last time I was here, and it's been a while, but there were, I see now you have espresso beverages prepared with whole milk. Last time I was here, I think there wasn't any milk, or am I remembering that right?
You're correct.
What was behind that philosophy?
Our philosophy the whole way from the beginning of our company until now is expand as we succeed. That worked, you know, so first it was pour over, that's all we did, and then we got an espresso machine, like, we're comfortable with drip, so let's do Americanos and espresso, get to know our coffee through that context of beverage. And then over here we thought, you know, let's expand it a little bit, and then we sort of just said, what's the best milk out there? And soy is great, almond is great, all that stuff, but we don't do it because we feel like traditionally coffee tastes best with the fats of a whole milk cow, you know.
There's something very scientific, like the containers are reminiscent of beakers, and you're looking at a timer and you've precisely measured things out.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things that I really like about science is precision, control, and repeatability. You know, basically, there's enough going against us with air temperature, barometric pressure, and, you know, me, that I need a lot of things to kind of govern my actions. I need some guardrails and some guidelines. So essentially, we have consistent temperature of water. We have consistent grind of our coffee, consistent weight of our coffee that we grind, and then we weigh the water as well.
You know, if a coffee machine were doing this, I wouldn't watch the water moving through here, and I wouldn't see it dripping. And you, your hand, like, you move in a very clear kind of pattern. It's interesting that the touch of the handmade that you're introducing to this process is also something that you are counteracting with all the precision of science.
Yes. If you get geeky enough into any industry or process, you're going to find beauty.
There were a lot of things you were saying about your approach and how you approach customers and all of that that seemed to be preempting like an anticipation that someone's going to call you pretentious or call you a hipster.
Yeah, and a lot of people do, you know, and I think when you do get to a really passionate level, like, let's say chocolate, you're not as likely to just pick up a Hershey bar and be like, someone's going to offer it to you, be like, yeah, I'm good. I don't really want to taste carnauba wax right now, you know? And it's not that you're being pretentious or elitist. You just kind of get it. So in a way, it's we talk a lot about, like, giving the finger to the status quo, even in our own minds, especially in our own minds. So this one has some really interesting peach tones to it.
Okay, I'm going to try this coffee with the peach tones. I actually do taste the peach tones, and the word actually, I know, implies that I'm surprised. I'm not surprised because of you. I'm surprised because of me. Because when people tell me that something has a tone of something, I sometimes taste that, and I sometimes, honestly, just cannot connect with that description. There's something sort of harsh and astringent about coffee, and then with the cream, it's smoother. And it is interesting to me that this does not have that astringent quality.
Freshness is a huge factor in that, right? So like the coffee we grew up on, that you had to add cream and sugar just to make it palatable, which becomes nostalgic. It actually becomes fun, you know? And
I do love a creamy drink.
And my big secret is I actually love to make it for you. Like I want to make the perfect cup of coffee, and sometime maybe I'll make you the perfect cream and sugar cup of coffee.
There's a culture of, like, the customer's always right, and you give people as many choices as they want, and you do whatever they want. And here it seems like you make a lot of choices.
Correct, yeah. So I would draw the correlation of, like, if I go to Boulevard, the tasting room, I'd be like, hey, man, can I get a Bud Light? Like, there's nothing wrong necessarily with a Bud Light or you wanting one, but Boulevard isn't, they don't have that, you know? So it's saying no with kindness, offering a parameter in which the experience can be had. It's not normal, and who am I to tell you how to drink your coffee? I'm not telling you you can't drink that, but if you're willing to come in and try something new, that's what we do.
So that was Gregory, and he was schooling me in his carefully, precisely brewed black coffee at Oddly Correct. So what do you guys think about this? What are you hearing?
Well, here's what I think about Oddly Correct, and I've been there a couple times. One is that unlike some of these new coffee shops that Emily was talking about that have a religious undertone like Homer's Coffee in Overland Park or Elio's Coffee, both nice places, by the way, Elio's Coffee on Independence Avenue, where there's definitely a religious subtext there. Well, at Oddly Correct, there's the religious subtext is the worship of good coffee.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I said earlier they're particular about the way they brew their coffee, and that perfectly displayed that. But when we want a really, really good cup of coffee and we're willing to take the time to get it, we go to Oddly Correct. So on Saturday mornings, we're like, let's make the trek, drive 10 minutes to go get a cup of Oddly Correct coffee. And, you know, if we want coffee and donuts, we'll still go to Oddly Correct and get coffee and then go to Lamar's, because the coffee is it really is that good. But you can see how much care and precision they put into it.
Well, and Greg has been the indie darling forever in coffee. Yeah. I mean, he really has. So now that he has his shop and there's actually a face that goes along with these coffee bags with the artwork on it that, you know, all the baristas have been collecting for years, it's fantastic to see him progress.
Our lines have just filled up, so I want to get as many of these recommendations as we can squeeze in. Let's turn to Taylor in Kansas City. Hi, Taylor.
Hi. I was calling, going back to what you were saying about places that kind of are crowded or where the baristas seem judgmental or snobby. And I think a place that is notorious for that in Kansas City is Broadway. It's just so crowded and hard to get in. And but I love their coffee. And something I found was that their roasting house is like a half a mile north, and there's no lines and there's no crowd, and you can get the same coffee there.
So there are two locations for Broadway Cafe. Those are both in Westport, and you prefer the roasting location.
I do, because I can just walk right in, and it's not a place where you would want to sit and spend all day. It's definitely not a coffee shop. But if you want to get the good coffee without the hassle of being in a littered like environment, you can just walk right in.
Thanks, Taylor.
Broadway Cafe is often full, and they don't have wireless. They don't want people there on their computers. And I get what she's saying. I mean, when we were talking about baristas that weren't very nice to you, Broadway was the first one that came to mind. But I love their coffee, and it's a great place to go.
And they were the first to roast coffee in Kansas City, so you got hats off for that.
Let's talk to Nicholas and Waldo. Hi, Nicholas.
Hello. I want to say something about the friendliness of the baristas at Broadway. I have been going there since I've been 16 years old. I've never encountered this mysterious, they're rude. I've always found them very, very friendly. I just want to get that out of the way.
They're not rude. They're just not warm. But they don't have to be, because the coffee is.
So there are differing opinions on the friendliness level of Broadway Cafe baristas. Nicholas, what do you want to recommend?
I would like to recommend Second Best Coffee. If you're going in for just like a straight up espresso drink, I love that they cap out their sizes at 12 ounces. I myself am a barista, and I tell you that it's very annoying when someone orders a 16 or 20 ounce cappuccino extremely dry.
Because why would it be so big? Because that's all milk.
Huh?
Because that's all milk, so that's...
It's espresso, a little bit of the milk, and then just a whole lot of foam on top. And doing that for 20 ounces is, I find, ridiculous.
So you like Second Best Coffee. Where is that?
That is on 85th, just in that strip mall right by 85th and Warnell.
Okay.
Just east of Warnell.
Well, thanks, Nicholas. And now let's get Don, also in Waldo, with us. Hi, Don.
Hi, how are you?
Great. How about you?
Well, pretty good. Could we go back to the difference on coffee shop and coffee house just for a short time?
We could for a short time.
Okay. I don't know that John would remember this, but in the 60s, or anyone else on the show would remember it, but in the 60s, there was a well-known coffee house in Kansas City called the Vanguard Coffee House. It was on Broadway, the east side of Broadway, north of Westport, south of 39th Street. And it was where you went to have coffee or espresso.
No, wait a minute, wait. I thought the Vanguard was on Main Street, 43rd and Main.
I thought it was on Broadway. Well, okay, you're correct me then. Yeah, it was Main then. I misremembered that. And but you went there for entertainment and small eats like quiche, cheesecake, pastries, things like that, but nothing heavy. And then the espresso. And
wasn't that kind of a beatnik coffee house?
Well, I think that's what Gina brought up earlier. It was, but the main thing they were known for, and I can't remember his name, but was a guy local from Kansas City, African American.
Danny Cox. You're talking about Danny Cox.
Danny Cox.
Charles knows everything.
The night I went there, it just happened to be that I caught the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band when they were just first starting out. And they did a whole show of their songs, and then the second half of the show they did was an Elvis Presley show of his songs, and even dressed up and imitated him. Great entertainment there, great espresso or coffee. But that was what was called a coffee house.
That is something we haven't talked about yet, is the entertainment component.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of coffee houses that have guitarists or poetry readings.
Open mic night.
Open mic night.
Because everybody has their computer now. They have their headphones.
Right. I know it, yeah.
Everybody's working.
Yeah.
Well, one last recommendation. I think we've got time for Nathan in Kansas City. Hi, Nathan.
Hi. Best coffee house in the city, Key Coffee in the River Market.
Hear, hear.
It's fantastic. But actually, I wanted to call. There's this little gym in the Northland called the Friendly Bean off the intersection of North Oak and Berry Road. If you're ever up north, the Friendly Bean, I mean, it's just fantastic. It's really out of the way, but it's just such a nice place to go. Best, it's a really good coffee. They do all their own roasting. It's fantastic.
Thanks so much, Nathan.
Yep.
Anyone else been there?
No.
I thought the Friendly Bean was a chain.
I did too. I guess it isn't.
Well, that is all the time we have for today's conversation about coffee and where to get it in Kansas City. Renee, we're sorry we didn't get time to get to your call. There was another caller we also missed. I'm sorry about that. Maybe next time. If you're going to celebrate the World Series all weekend long, we hope this guide to local caffeination helps keep you strong. Charles Fruza, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Gina.
And Emily Ferris, it's been fun.
Thank you.
Jenny Vergara, thanks for joining our little crew today.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
A list of everyone's recommendations will be available online at kcur.org later today. On Monday, Central Standard will return with a show on Section 8 housing in Kansas City. How does Kansas City's handling of public housing compare with trends in other cities? And what exactly is going on over on Armour Boulevard anyway? Find out Monday on Central Standard. Our show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross with lots of help from Patrick Quick, Matt Hodapp, and Christina Leffring. Linda Scher runs the board for us every day. Our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs. I'm Gina Kaufman. Have a great weekend, everyone.